The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Let's turn our attention to Ukraine. The Russian President Vladimir Putin offered something of an olive branch, but not much, with the proposal that both sides agree to a 36-hour ceasefire over Orthodox Christmas starting today. Ukraine are having none of it. I'm joined on the line by the defence editor at The Economist, Shashank Joshi. Shashank, good morning.
Good morning to you.
This, it would appear, was initiated by members of the religious in Russia. It wasn't Putin's idea.
No, but of course the Russian Orthodox Church and the patriarch who in question who suggested this truce is a religious figure, but perhaps not in the sense that we'd understand it here. He's very close to the Kremlin, has been supportive of the war in the past. The Orthodox Church's power is bound up with the Russian military in very deep and substantial ways. So I wouldn't view this as a kind of, you know, saintly religious neutral figure who's just proposing a humanitarian pause for the sake of it. I think, you know, we must understand this is an organization that is quite close to the Kremlin. And on top of that, we'd also add the Russian army does probably need a pause because it's mobilizing forces, building up new units. It's not because it wants a deal or negotiations. It's because it needs a breathing room to be able to build up that fist to go and punch Ukraine again.
Russia is saying, well, we'll happily take peace, but you have to leave us the bits that we annexed last year. Obviously, leaving open the option to continue the war at a later point if they want to. That's not going to be well received by Ukraine and already has been dismissed.
Well, of course. I mean, Russia sits on about 20% of Ukrainian land in Donbass in the east, two provinces in the south, Crimea, the Crimean Peninsula. So, of course, you know, they still feel they've pushed Russia out of Kharkiv province in the east, out of Kherson on the right bank of the Dnipro River in the south, and they have the momentum. They're getting Western weapons. In the last couple of days, we've seen news that the French are sending light tanks. The Americans and Germans are sending quite well-armored, well-equipped infantry fighting vehicles, more Patriot missile batteries for air defense. So the Ukrainians feel momentum is on their side and they can force Russia out of more territory. Why would they pause now and allow Russia to lock in the gains it has made so far?
There is an offer of mediation. The Turkish President Tayyip Erdogan has tried on more than one occasion to bring Russia to the table rather than anything else. He's saying he can do that. He's spoken separately to Vladimir Zelensky and Vladimir Putin. Realistically, though, is that offer of mediation going to bring anything?
Well, Erdogan does have some standing in this because he's provided weapons to Ukraine. But he's also a long-standing partner of Russia and talks to Putin a lot more than any other Western leader. He's also a key player in the grain deal that was signed a few months ago to allow the shipping of grain from Ukraine's ports. And Turkey plays a pivotal role in the verification process for that. So he's got what you might call kind of diplomatic authority on all sides. But that really doesn't mean they're going to listen to him and do whatever he says. At the end of the day, neither side, there is no indication either side wants talks right now. This is a lull in the fighting in which both sides are preparing for another round. As the ground freezes, for example, that will make it easier for armored vehicles to move over them again. So negotiations won't be possible until both sides get a sense of how they are likely to fare in the next round of fighting. And that will not be known, I think, for months to come.
In your own publication, there is a headline that Russia risks becoming ungovernable and descending into chaos. Putin cannot afford to win the war. He also has the potential to not survive it. It is something that has turned into an existential crisis, considering he thought it would all be over in 3 days, which puts him in a very dangerous position.
Well, yes, it does. But I always caution that in the same way that dictators can manufacture their own reality using state media and manufacture a war for themselves and the conditions for that war, as he did a year ago, they can manufacture an end to it. You know, think about the Iran-Iraq war in the 1980s and Imam Khomeini, the Islamist dictator of Iran at that time, saying he would drink from the poison chalice and end that war. Think of other dictators in history who have been able to do this. So, you know, while I agree that this has become a matter of pride and prestige for him, and he has been willing to change strategy to some extent. He's gone on the defensive. He gave up territory in Kherson, conducted quite an effective military withdrawal. But I do agree. I think that as long as Putin is in office, we are probably going to look at a Russian state that is willing to keep throwing conscripts at this war. And therefore, it will require Russia's military or economic or political exhaustion in some fashion for there to be the conditions for a really durable end to this conflict.
What happens on the first anniversary of this war? Russia will probably try a show of strength of some kind, but it's hard to see what they'll do outside of what they've done already, which is a war of attrition, targeting civilian infrastructure, just making a menace of themselves as opposed to doing anything significant militarily. Is it just going to try and continue the grind of the Ukrainian people in the hope that the West will lose interest and somehow they can eke out a victory?
Well, there's a multifaceted approach, and one of them is that attritional contest on the front lines, throwing mobilized recruits into the conflict and waiting for new offensive units to take shape while you train them. That will take months. But there's also the air war. There are the drone and missile attacks on Ukrainian electrical infrastructure. And as the temperature is, you know, very low in parts of Ukraine, that's having an impact. That's causing quite a great deal of suffering in Ukraine. It's impacting the families of soldiers. And then the third front, you could say, is beyond Ukraine. It's undermining our will here in Europe and in the United States, in North America, to say, you know, your energy price is going up, your cost of living is rising because of the war, and it's all futile. Look, it's a stalemate, so you may as well give up and coax Ukraine to talks. And in that, of course, it's worth noting the incredible spell of warm weather that we're having in parts of Europe owing to climate change, anthropogenic climate change, is undermining Putin's strategy because it is diminishing the impact of his gas weapon. So I think he'll have to consider that, but he will be looking to next winter and saying, okay, it didn't work so well now, but they won't be able to fill up their gas storage this year, and therefore I'm looking ahead to next winter. So I think Putin will be looking to undermine our will in Europe over a much longer period using the gas weapon and other instruments of statecraft.
Okay, we leave it there for now. Shashank Joshi, defense editor at The Economist, thank you very much for joining us with the latest on Ukraine.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.